VentureCast.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to episode 137 of the Burden of Command podcast. I'm your host, Earl Breon, and this podcast is a production of the Leadership Phalanx. To find out more about me and the Leadership Phalanx and what we do, visit leadershipphalanx.com. That's leadership, PHALANX.com. Now, today's guest in this episode is going to be Mr. Chris Ciccinelli. Chris is CEO and president of Pure Romance and has grown the small family business in Cincinnati into the world's largest in-home party company of its kind. A front page story in the St. Louis Dispatch called Pure Romance the new Tupperware of the 2000s. And today, the company has annual revenues of more than $350 million. He spends over 200 days a year on the road giving motivational seminars and personally training and meeting Pure Romance's independent consultants, which now number more than 40,000 in every U.S. state and abroad. In 2018, after their 8-year-old coming out as transgender, Ciccinelli founded the Living with Change Foundation to help trans youth and their families. Now, as you see, Chris has got an interesting background. He's in an interesting business. And, you know, some people may feel that this is a little taboo subject to talk about and may question why I would have somebody like Chris on the show. Well, you'll find out very quick why. Chris has a lot of insight into business, a lot of insight into how to grow a business, and his message of empowerment, especially for women, is one that is really needed right now. So during the course of this conversation, we're going to hit on a lot of topics. We're going to talk about his business, talk about working with his mom to grow the business, and you're going to come away with a lot of great insight. So without further ado, let me go ahead and get out of the way, let that stinger play, and let you get into this outstanding interview with Chris Ciccinelli. All right. Well, Chris, welcome to this episode of the Burden of Command podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being here today.
No, I love having you here. I really appreciate you being a guest on the show and being a fellow podcaster yourself. I know you know how important guests are, and I really appreciate you taking your time. And before we get into your podcast and the book and all the great things you're doing, I want to start you out where I start all my guests. When you hear the phrase, the burden of command, what does that mean to you?
You know, when I hear that phrase, and Earl, it's kind of interesting, when I first heard that, the burden of command, I think sometimes it's all of the heavy lifting that leaders sometimes need to be able to communicate to their teams, to their staff, to the people around them, because I do believe that as a leader, we have a lot of things that are on our plate. And I felt that was the first thing. And when I heard that, that meant that, hey, there, sometimes when you're that leader, you're going to have a burden that's going to be falling around with you. So that was what I thought. I was like, okay, this is my best answer for that question.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's a good answer. And it's, cause it's true. It is kind of a fluid thing. And I like the way you put it, follows around with you. So, no, I like that answer. Appreciate you sharing that. All right. So my guests heard a little bit about you in the pre-roll bio. But I want to talk a little bit about, The Secret Is You, the book you have out now. And the subtitle is How I Empowered 250,000 Women to Find Their Passion and Change Their Lives. Now, that's a pretty interesting subtitle there. 250,000 lives, well, 250,000 women's lives changed, and who knows how many other lives change as a result of that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And can I be honest? It's been, you know, when you think about that, this book, The Secret of You, this was something that I really want to be able to help with, you know, entrepreneurs. You know, coming out of COVID, I had seen and heard so many people talking about, you know, they need a side hustle or they're going to start up their business. And I had friends of mine even saying the same thing, Chris, you know, I'm thinking about starting something on my own. Is there any way you can help me as, you know, you kind of went out there and you've built this business? Is there anything you can help me with? And for years, I've wanted to write kind of a tell-all, how did I do it? Putting some things that were easy and simple out there for people that wanted to go out there and start a business, or better yet, to build a business. And yes, it's true. I've helped 350,000 small businesses now, you know, year to date, of being able to go out there and figure out the biggest secrets of how to go out there and keep your business not just growing, not just starting, but also making sure it stays alive. You know, the rate of failure in small businesses is 80% in the first year. 90% of them don't even make it to 5 years. So it's really was this kind of tell-all to kind of help people understand that the biggest secret of all is, how do I lead myself first? I think so many people, when they sit back and go, what's the secret to success? Hey, Chris, how did you build a company from $1 million to 350 million? What did you do? I need to know everything. And they like, is there a blueprint? What should I be following? What type of software package? Did you do it all through media, advertising? And I have to sometimes tell people, pump your brakes. Let's go back to the first most important thing is, and why we talk about it in the book, is you have to figure out how to lead yourself first. And that's what I've worked with business owners over the years, is they always feel like if they are making it or if they're not making it, it's out of their control of their circumstances. If people are doing well, people are like, oh my gosh, you know, it's doing well because of the economy. It's doing well because of this, this, and this. Or if they're doing bad, it's also, I'm doing bad because of the economy, or it's doing bad because I don't have enough contacts. And what I try to get them to understand is it starts with the process that you need to figure out first, which is, how do I lead me? And that's why when this book came out, I wanted more people to understand that they go out there and they spend time designing all these aspects of their life. They go design a kitchen. They go design a bathroom. They go design a bedroom or build a house, whatever it might be. But so few people actually design the life that they want. And I think that's the biggest reason for me, you know, writing this book, was tell people that they really do have control over this aspect. They really do have control to go out there and build what it is that they want. And I think that that was a big reason for me to write this book coming out of COVID and hearing so many people saying, I want a side hustle. Side hustle's the new security. I don't want to leave my job or my family's income into somebody else's hands outside of my decision-making power. And so for me, that was why, you know, when we looked at the Secret of as You, was a perfect timing to come out with this.
No, I love everything you said there, and you're 100% right. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I started the Leadership Phalanx. And, you know, one of the things I talk about heavily through that is this idea of ownership and how to correctly take ownership of a situation. And I love it, because what you're talking about here, you know, you use the word control. I like that word, and it's also power. You know, is there, like, when you realize that you have that control, you have that power, that means you can control your own outcomes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. I think a lot of people are so reactionary in today. They don't think that they have the power. They don't think that they can actually control or direct their lives on where they need to go. And what that really gets down to is, how do you take somebody from being reactive? Our whole entire lives, all we've done has been reactive. We react to, you know, how our parents tell us to go clean our rooms, not clean our rooms. Instead of just cleaning the rooms, be proactive. You know that that's going to come down. You know, my mom was always one of those people that, hey, you know, when you wake up, you make your bed every morning. I didn't want to have to be told to make my bed, because I know that the reactive side of that was, you know what? She's going to be frustrated. She's going to be angry. It's not done. It's not made. And you know what? At the end of the day, I could get myself out of all of that if I would just do what I'm supposed to be doing in the day, in the morning, by just making my bed. Being proactive is a really big thing about having control in one's life. And I tell people all the time, they're like, well, you know, how do I become more proactive if I don't know what I need to do? And I'm like, that's why designing your future, designing exactly what you want to do. We have Pinterest has made billions and billions of dollars, right? They a great organization, great company. And all they do is they basically give you a board to put all these amazing pictures on of if you want to go vacation somewhere, if you're getting ready for Christmas decorations, or if you're getting ready to go out there and do some sort of themed party at your home. Well, the same thing goes true. You can create your own Pinterest board of what you want to do for your business, for your life. And it's through interactions. Like Earl, today you'll be on my Pinterest board, right? Like you'll be somebody that I have that's been brought into my life. What did I take away from Earl that I want to be able to say, hey, this is something I want to add to my life. I like how he does this. And you just add these little components of all of these different Pinterest pictures of all these people we come in contact with, or places we might have traveled, or you know, things we might want to buy. And that's where we starting to design our life. That's where we start getting more control over the things that we want. That's where we start becoming more proactive, not reactive. And it leads down to the final piece of this, is that most people talk about faking things. And I think that that is one of the worst things you could do. You hear it all the time. Fake it till you make it. Fake it till you make it. I'm more on the side, believe it till you become it. Because I think more and more people, as they start gaining control, they start designing their life differently, they start thinking about every interaction as a Pinterest moment that they put on their board, then people start creating the life of what they want and where they want to go. And that was the designing their life and not just living it by default. Too many people had stopped dreaming. And I hear this all the time. People go, oh, Chris, you get on a motivational, you know, kind of rant on this. And I'm like, no, you know, man, there was times that in going from $1 million to $350 million, I traveled in a U-Haul from city to city to city. You know, I would spend money that I did not have because I believed that this business opportunity was something that people needed. I believed that so hard that I would be missing weekend events. My friends would be going out doing different things, but I believed enough in my product, enough in myself, and enough that this was the right direction, that's where the achievement came in. And you know, you don't just do something and it just all of a sudden it just kind of blows up. You got to put your time into it. You've got to be the person that's being proactive and not being reactive. If I every day was waiting for my customers to get sales, I'd be waiting for a long period of time. We have to proactively go out and get people to want to do business with us. If it's proactively to network, proactively to have them in the funnel, proactively to, hey, maybe they do have a referral that they'd like to be able to pass to us. All of these things are why I believe so big in my life is that people, they don't buy products. They buy people. And that's exactly why when you think about The Secret Is You and why that was so important, it goes back to those things. How do we go out there and make sure that we are teaching people more and more? Don't fake it till you make it. Believe it till you become it. And those are big things that I will tell you that have been able to help me and allow me to be a lot more proactive in my life.
Oh, man, that was powerful. Everything you just said there, I really like that. One of the things that I like when I'm teaching leaderships, I like to inject history into the conversation. And what I like about your book is you start off with some history of how you kind of got on this path. Mm-hmm. And in the very first chapter, Humble Beginnings, you share a story. So, you know, as I mentioned in the pre-roll bio, the company you keep talking about, taking from $1 million to $350 million, is Pure Romance. You sell intimacy and sexual health products, and you know, there's a lot of societal stigma around that topic, and that's kind of where it started for you, right? You had an incident. And I'll let you share the story because I think you tell it great. But that's where it started for you, right?
Yeah, it started there. You know, you think about this. You know, my mom was working for four pediatricians, right? Barely making any money. You know, $4.25 an hour is what she's making, you know, back in, you know, when I was in grade school. And so a Phil Donahue show had come on, and my mom had actually decided that, hey, look, I need to make some extra money. I need to be able to do kind of like a little bit of a side hustle. She had done, you know, Discover Toys, done Mary Kay, done some of these other different types of products. And this product line kind of allowed her to look and say, hey, this is something different that I'm able to add to my customer base. One, my relationship wasn't the greatest at that time with my husband, and I want to be able to go out there and be able to help women educate themselves about their bodies, about their sexual wellness, about their sexual health. So I remember, you know, I'd always see my mom go and leave at nighttime, and I never knew exactly where she was going or what she was doing, but I always knew that she would always make sure that, you know, when she came back home, we always had, you know, being able to take care of us if it was being able to get new clothes for school or if it was whatever. But one time as I was getting into junior high, you know, my mom had been doing this now for about, you know, 4 or 5 years now. And next thing you know, my mom had always been doing kind of a radio show. It was Bill Cunningham, big, you know, personality here in Cincinnati, Ohio. Yep. And my mom did the show with him. And so the next day at the bus stop, one of the boys comes up and goes, oh my God, your mom is the sex toy lady. Oh my God, there's a sex toy, the kid of the sex toy lady. I'm like, what? Who are you pointing to? So I'm looking around. I have no idea who this guy is pointing at. Oh yeah, my dad and I were driving home. He was a high schooler. I was again, like I said, a junior high kid. He started, you know, saying this, and I got angry. You know, here's this guy calling out my mom, saying my mom's the sex toy lady. I didn't know really what a sex toy was at that time. And all I remember is him and I starting to fight. And the bus driver ended up coming, sets us in two different seats. We get to school and they take us right to the principal's office and they call our parents. Well, my mom came in and picked me up. And I'll never forget that day. She came in and picked me up and she goes, Christopher, what in the heck are you doing? I said, Mom, you know, so Billy, you know, called you the sex toy lady. I can't believe you, you know, I don't understand. What do you mean? This is what you do. She goes, wait, back up. She goes, let me make sure I educate you on something. You know how your dad and I, you know, got a divorce? And I said, yeah, I know how that. Yeah. She goes, well, what I'm doing every day is I'm going out there and teaching people how to keep their relationships from not having that happen, making sure people do communicate and giving them a way to communicate, Chris. And she goes, you know, I don't know what Billy said, but I will tell you that if you have questions about what I do or what it is, I want to sit down and want to educate you. So my mom literally, you know, I said, I really don't want to know, you know, whatever. And she goes, well, let me tell you something. If anybody else like Billy or anybody else says anything about what I do or what they're doing, let me tell you something. I will let you take the invoice of what their parents buy and I'll let you put it on the pool and tomorrow at school. And I just remember her sitting there saying that to me. And at the time I didn't know what she meant, but now as I got older, it's kind of funny to think about that. But here's a woman that went out there and, you know, people would, you know, if it's concerned citizens for family values, they would picket in front of our house and tell my mom she was running a brothel. Well, really what she was doing was she was cleaning up an industry that was very male dominated. She was giving women a space to talk about their wellness when it came to their sexual health. She was giving them a very, you know, intimate area where they could normalize some of the things that were happening in their relationship. And I remember, you know, after all of that happened, I went to college, played football at Mount Union College, left from there, went to Atlanta for my first job. I was working in Atlanta and Chicago for a publicly traded company. And then in 2000, my mom calls me. Now, my mom had started this business in, you know, based in her house. And she's like, hey, I really think I have something here. I think that there's an opportunity for more and more people to get educated from this product, to be able to, you know, help the divorce rate. It's creeping past 60%. We also think that there's a lot of opportunity for women to make money on a side job as well. I said, okay, great. What does that have to do with me, Mom? She goes, well, I'd like you to come back to Cincinnati, Ohio and help me scale it. I said, there is no way I am moving back to Cincinnati, Ohio and doing this. I'll get a job nowhere in the world, Mom. I've got my career. I'm heading down a direction. She goes, listen, you know how to market. You know how to storytell. You know how to merchandise. I need you to help me expand this because right now we're just in Cincinnati and in Detroit. She had taken it from the time she started it to about $1 million. And, you know, she did really well. It was a great business. She was making very good money. But just like any great kid, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back. I will go and I will help my mom. I thought I'd only be there for, you know, maybe 6 months, help her do this and then move on to do something else. Nope. 21 years later, I'm still here. But it was funny. You know, I sat down with her for the first day of when I came into work with her. And she said to me, she goes, so what's the game plan on how we're going to grow this? I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, I need you to come up with a game plan on how we're going to scale this. You're brought back to market this. I said, well, do we have a 5-year plan? She goes, well, my plan was I sent you to college so you can figure this out. So that was my first interaction with my mom as my boss. And, but it was magical because we did get in a U-Haul. We did invest time in working with small business owners. We did sit back and teach them how to run inventory, how to go out there and set goals, not just setting goals, but how do you achieve the goals that you're setting? And we did that. And that allowed us to really start, you know, really helping small businesses and really figuring out exactly what they needed to do to be successful.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's such a great story. And, you know, it's very interesting, right? Because as you mentioned a couple times through there, this kind of, you know, stigma that's around that industry, you know, people protesting in front of your mom's house. And, you know, when the kid, you know, called her the sex toy lady and how that made you feel. And then, like, for most kids, just this, you know, there's this kind of horror image of, you know, walking in on their parents having sex or finding their mom's sex toy or whatever it is, right? But here you have your mom saying, hey, I want you to come help me get this business that's exactly what we do. And then you've got to, like, have these conversations with your mom in the room about these items, right? So I'm getting here is, you know, good on her for seeing that and taking it on. Good on her for having a plan to, you know, send you to college. So, you know, that's some long-term projection stuff there, right?
Oh, yeah.
But how do you, when women want to come in and join the Pure Romance family, do you see a lot of that awkwardness still, or has it normalized quite a bit?
You know, I think it's normalized quite frequently because I think the discussion, you know, when you think about this, you know, for years and years and years, it was always in the back of a magazine, a CD truck stop. It was always kind of like a very taboo situation. And I think, you know, the way we have operated the business has been very, very professional. We lead with education first. I think we don't lead with product. We lead with education. We lead with, you know, trusted, you know, resource. Most of the people that come into a party, you know, they know or an online event, they know that they're going to be asking questions or getting questions asked to them that they might not even ask their doctors, right? This is like, we get a lot of the, you know, kind of almost lay sexual health professionals. So I think more and more people are becoming more comfortable with the topic, but you got to put people in a comfortable setting. You got to make sure too, you allow for a very open community to have the discussion in. You got to make sure that people are relaxed. You know, this is important. And I think the way we've been able to do it, the way, you know, my mom has set it up as far as to, you know, make the conversation comfortable for women. That's why people always ask, well, why can't men come to parties? Well, to be honest with you, this is the time frame for women to sit back and have the discussion about if it's body image issue, if it's, you know, something that they feel like they're it's not going well in the relationship. This is a safe space for them to be able to come. So I do think the way we operate makes customers feel comfortable. They know we're not trying to lead with product. We lead with education, which I think has been a huge game changer for us as a business. And also I think more people now look and go, man, they're really more on the sexual health side of things and not so much on what people have in their perception of what we do.
Yeah. No, and I love it. And that's exactly what I love about your business and what you're doing. Like, it reminds me of back in episode 115, I interviewed a gentleman named Charlie Bales, who is a current CEO of ABC Fine Wine and Spirits down in Florida. Yep. And he went through the same thing, what you just were discussing with, quote, liquor stores, right? He's changed the game of liquor stores. And these are, you know, these are fine, experiential establishments. And, you know, it's not just going down to the package store and coming out with a brown paper bag. Like, it's an experience to go there. And I think that's a lot of what you're doing. And I love it because, you know, these are, you know, when we talk about all types of wellness, this is a very important piece of mental health, of overall fulfillment is sexual health, right?
100%. I think so many people forget that, I'll never forget that I went to a Young Cancer Survivor Coalition event one night, and my mom and I were invited there to do kind of some education on just kind of sexual wellness and having a discussion. So we followed up a doctor panel, and literally, these doctors are asking all these questions, and these are cancer survivors. And this one woman comes up and she said, "Hey, I got a question for you, doc. When is my husband going to touch me again? I feel like, that our intimate life has really, has went south. He doesn't, look at me as a woman anymore. I feel like I just want to be intimate with my partner." And this doctor stood up and goes, "That's sex is a luxury. You know what? You're lucky to be alive." And I saw this woman just start crying. And she was like, so at the end, we then have our turn where we're coming up, the doctors have left. And my mom goes, "That will never happen again. We are going to help educate these women that they can have their sex life, because it's not a luxury. This sex is not a luxury. It's part of who we are as human beings. And it is a huge component of mental, physical, and emotional health." And so we know, as we've talked to millions and millions and millions of women over the past 21 years, actually the past three decades, apologize, that this is something that I think so many people think it's just, it's nice to have. No, this is a very intimate part of our lives that we need.
Yeah. No, I love it. And that's, and you got there exactly, because that was kind of where I was hoping we would get, because, I say on this podcast quite often that all leadership is just another type of relationship. And that's, what I see that you all do is help with those relationship pieces, help answer those questions. And, on a business level, no, you're not probably going to go out and buy pure romance products for your staff. That might cross some lines.
Yeah, no.
But, you all have made a business out of this and have empowered, and I love you using the word empowered women to be able to take control of their lives in that sort of way and build those relationships among themselves and get into this, as you mentioned at the beginning, this self-leadership cycle.
Yep.
Where they don't have to depend on other people, and they don't have to, when a doctor says, sex is a luxury, they don't have to take that at face value because they know better now, right?
Well, it's so funny, Earl. It goes back to a couple of things. I think that the big thing that we all have to remember is that if we really want to be comfortable in life, right? We want to be comfortable in life, then we've got to have the uncomfortable conversations. And that's really an important thing. When you're a leader out there and you are, going out there and saying, "Hey, listen, what does it mean to go out there and be a leader today? What does it mean to be somebody that can give an unbelievable experience?" I tell people more than anything, if you can find happiness in being uncomfortable, you will find that you are starting to live a more comfortable lifestyle. And I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive, what most people think, like, why do I want to live uncomfortable? That doesn't make any sense. But that's where most of the money is made. That's where most of the change is made. I look at this all the time. We had to live a very uncomfortable lifestyle where people were sitting there having perceived notion of who we were, what we were about. And all the while, it would get on us, and we would be like, "Oh my gosh, this is like, it's so hard. It's, why are people treating us like this? Like, we're just normal people trying to give information and empower people about a topic most people are so uncomfortable about talking about." But what we found during that thing is that the more uncomfortable that we, more comfortable we came with being uncomfortable, the more money we made, the more people we would be able to touch, the more people we would be able to empower, and the more people would be wanting to have and be part of the conversation. And so I do believe that is one of the biggest successes that, most people have to understand. If you're finding you want to be out there and be that leader, you just got to find some happiness in being uncomfortable, because that's where the comfortability for your life will come.
Yeah, no, 100%. I love it. As a former active duty Marine myself, that whole idea of get comfortable being uncomfortable rings very true to me. And I love it. And, because, the truth is, that scenario that you mentioned, a lady having cancer asking that question, if you're doing your job as a leader, you may not get that exact question, but if you're paying attention and you're building those relationships and you notice that one of your employees goes from being stellar to maybe underperforming a little bit, or they go from being outgoing and bubbly to being reserved, you may have to have that conversation, and you may find out, well, hey, you know, I just got diagnosed with this, my life's in a wreck, and they may actually blurt out, you know, and my husband doesn't touch me anymore.
Yep.
And you know, that's a conversation that is going to get uncomfortable for both of you, but if you handle that with maturity and respect instead of the way some people might handle it, you gain a lot more credit as a leader, right?
100%. I think, and that's the biggest thing, you know, I think sometimes it is having those very uncomfortable conversations that people don't want to have, but addressing them but addressing them from a position of grace, class, and respect. I think that's what we need to make sure that we're instilling in our life. You know, it got me thinking too, you know, another kind of big thing, you know, when you brought up being a Marine, and by the way, you know, appreciate your service. You know, one of the biggest things that I think that you will probably agree with on this is any type of leader, any type of person that's out there trying to run something today or build something today, you know, we live by a couple of things. One is detaching from the outcome and committing to the process, right? So many people I talk to, you know, that's why I wrote this book too, was, you know, so many people want to be wealthier, they want to be able to make money, or they want to have a six-figure job. Well, everybody thinks it and they say it, but very few will do it. And the reason that they don't do it is because too many people are fixated on the outcome. The outcome is great. I love the outcome. Like when we sit back and say, hey, we want to hit, you know, $400 million in sales. Okay, that's the outcome. What are the processes that we're going to do every day to get us to the outcome? And the process is the process of the extra phone call, the extra email, the extra text message, the process of staying a student, the process of making ourselves better, the process of improving our customer service, the process of picking up the phone. All of those things are what really I see too many people. Nobody likes the process because nobody's cheering for them when they're making the phone call or the email or whatever. Everybody loves the sale because now you're becoming the hero. You're becoming where people stand up and go, oh my God, that's a great product. Thank you so much. And I think, you know, you get that as being a Marine. Like it is the process. It's how many times can you drill something a day to improve or to get better on and make it more efficient. And I do think that, you know, that's one thing when it looks at the secret of you. If you're out there and you're listening to this right now, you said, hey, I want to go out there and start my own business. I want to go out and make six figures. I want to go out there and build a $1 million team. Great. Awesome. All of those things are wonderful. But what are the processes you need to find out first that's going to get you the six-figure salary, that's going to get you to the million-dollar organization or million-dollar business that you're trying to create? And then what you need to do is you need to forget about the 100K. You need to forget about the $1 million and do the processes that a $1 million person would do, $100,000 person would do. And that has been a game changer when people go, wait, I can do this? Yeah, because once you start believing in yourself, being proactive, believing gives you the achieving ability that you want to go out there and do. And people get back and say, Chris, how do you know all this? Well, when you work with 250,000 women business owners and you know, my track record is taking and working with them where they start at zero and now making six figures, you know, I have a bandwidth of saying, take this information that I've worked on for 21 years and apply it in your life, apply it in your business because it works. This isn't like somebody that's theory talking about like how to run a business or how to build a business. I've done it several times.
And that is valuable. That is extremely valuable. And what I like about what you said there, right, is I don't know if you've heard this concept, finite and infinite games. Are you familiar with it?
Oh, yeah. 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 I got it. Actually, it's in my bookshelf.
I love it. Love it. Which one? Simon Sinek or
the Simon Sinek, the infinite game?
Right. Yeah. Yep. So the it originated with a gentleman named James Kars. And, you know, Simon took it and prettied it up. But, you know, what I love about it, right, is what you're talking about there with detachment from the outcome, right, is the danger in that is if you say, hey, I want to make six figures this year, you know, when you do that, you give yourself an out. Hey, I won.
I won. Right? Yep. Yep.
And you can take that pack off. So maybe you made six figures in 6 months. Well, what can you do with that next 6 months? So, you know, make that goal something that is, hey, I want to make as much as I can, or I want to be as successful as I can, not put that artificial barrier finish line on it. Because it's good to have a goal, but it can be counterproductive if you're not paying attention.
I love it because that is so true. You know, that's why, you know, it's interesting when I hear people go, Chris, I hit my goal. I have goal fatigue. I've already achieved it. I'm like, all right. You know, so are you playing, you hit the goal. So what's your next goal? I don't know. I got the house that I want and I got the car that I wanted. I got this. I'm like, okay. So how do you understand that this, it's never over? There is no panacea. This isn't an end. There is no like, okay, I hit this and I'm done. I deal with this with a lot of salespeople all of the time, business owners. And that's where we have to get them to get on the mindset that goal fatigue is something that they've got to work through. Because you're right. Once they get to 100,000, why can't they do it the next year and the next year after that, next year? How many people do you see go out there when they win a sales goal or a record or set a record, but they don't do it year in and year out? You think about like a Tom Brady. That guy, he's playing every year for one reason only. And that's not to win a Super Bowl. It's to win every game. That's the difference, right? He's not going there to play. He doesn't sit back and go on his vision board, I'm going to be the Super Bowl. He goes, no. Every pass he throws, he wants to complete. Every time he runs it, every time he's under center, he wants to get that first down. And he wants to get him to a touchdown. That's the way, you know, you have to think. Don't be just thinking about winning the Super Bowl. Don't be thinking about just this year. But how do you do it every year? And I think that's why I like the book with Simon Sinek. I think he's so true on all many things that he says.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, they're both great. He did a much better job of unpacking Cars' kind of original ideas. Like, for anybody listening, like the Cars book is great, but it gets dry real quick because he gets off on some major tangent. Simon does a great job, like he normally does, and that guy's just magic. So I want to talk. You were talking about difficult conversations here a little bit. And one of the things I love again that you share in your book. And I want to bring this up because I know, you know, it's something I struggle with, mildly. I'm finding more and more of my friends have struggled with this a little bit. You know, you went through this process and did all these things, while dealing with dyslexia, right?
Oh yeah. Big time.
Yeah. And so how was that process? Like, how did you find out and what were your steps to kind of, I guess you could say, overcome that?
Well, I will tell you, Earl, that, you know, it's kind of almost a sensitive subject even today in writing this book. You know, as you know, and you probably talked to a lot of authors on there, we all do, you know, we have to read the book and we do that for, if it's for Kindle, if it's for whatever it might be. And this one, you know, I had to read the book because they want me as the author to read it. Well, it brought up everything from fourth grade again, you know, and in the book I talk about this. I got held back in fourth grade, you know, and I couldn't figure out why. I was always in the slow reading group. I was always in a group that, you know, I was always scared to read out loud. Words would mix up on me. I was never a great student, and I always felt like the teachers were always like, you know, okay, you're going to be in this slow group or the slow place. I would always do really well math and history. Those were great subjects for me. Nope. But I remember that, you know, I got all kinds of scholarship offers for football. I went to a school here in Cincinnati called Cincinnati Moeller. It's a pretty big, you know, athletic school here in Cincinnati. And so I had all these offers, but I had one small problem. Every time I kept taking the SAT, I would not get the 700 that I needed to be able to take it. And a lot of people laugh and go, well, don't you get 400 points just for signing your name? The answer is yes. But I will tell you, you know, you look at that and just, I couldn't take a time test. I couldn't read the story problems. I couldn't do this. And so finally, my mom took me to Sylvan Learning Center and said, you know, can you help Chris study for the SAT? They had an SAT program to be able to help people pass the SATs. And the lady, after two visits with me, calls in my mom and says, have you ever had him tested for dyslexia? And my mom's like, no, you know, and we end up finding out my senior year that I had dyslexia. And I got tested. I went out and was able to take the SAT on time. I ended up passing it. It was great, but I just remember how hard it was for me to overcome that. But I did. You know, here's a kid that, you know, was a complete D student for diploma in high school, barely getting by, And, you know, and even today, when I read a document, I have to read the document over and over and over again, but I never gave up. I had to be stronger than my strongest excuse. My strongest excuse is like, oh, I have a dyslexia, so I'm just going to make that my Achilles heel or my excuse. No, I have to be stronger than that. And reading the book, when I was doing this for Amazon and everybody else, I remember the first day we were supposed to read, you know, three chapters of The Secret Is You. Now, I listen to Audible all the time. I'm sorry, yep. It was Audible that I was doing this for. And I listen to Audible books all the time. You know, I have all my legal documents. They're transcribed so I can listen to them as I'm kind of, you know, so I don't have to read everything. And so I remember I was supposed to read three chapters. I only got 17 pages done of the book. I was mortified that here I am, an executive running a $350 million organization, and I still couldn't read out loud. And it was really, a point where I said, you know what, Chris, you know, we talk about maintenance. You're a big believer in maintaining things and not having to start over. I just quit reading and started listening. And I will tell you, dyslexia doesn't go away. You've got to maintain it. You've got to understand that you got to do it. So from that time frame when I did the book for Audible, I kept going back and I read now every night. I read one chapter of whatever it might be. If I'm reading a book, I used to just listen to them when I'd run, you know, whatever. Now I make it a habit to continuously maintain my dyslexia. So I never go back to that. Now I read things all the time for our video team. I read things online for our staff. I would have never done that before. But now I do it so I can keep that maintenance of tackling my strongest excuse.
Yeah, no, and I love that. And, you know, again, I've struggled with it myself. That's one of the reasons, to be completely honest with folks, that's one of the reasons why, as much as people are saying, hey, write a book, it's one of the reasons that's been kind of holding me back and why I went the podcast route instead. I can talk all day. Mine shows up when I'm actually typing. Like, reading doesn't bother me so much. But typing is what, and for me, it's words that end in ing. Like I always type them ign, like every time. So anyways, I can kind of identify with some of those struggles there. And I was lucky that mine was, milder. But in some ways, not so much, because I think that's why I went so long without discovering that it was a thing. Is because I could read fairly well, but writing was always what held me back in school. It's one of the reasons why I didn't go to college. One of the reasons why I went in the Marines instead of going to college was this thing. And what, yeah, I love about it, though, is sharing it, right? And seeing what you've done. And, you know, we talk about the Richard Bransons and those folks. You know, it's a great message to have out there. And thank you for sharing it in your book, because a lot of people have this issue. A lot of people are undiagnosed with it because, you know, sometimes these kids are kind of like what you mentioned, either misdiagnosed or held back because they're, quote, slow or whatever. So I just want to say, you know, again, thank you for sharing your story and kind of how that rolled out for you, because it's a good story for people who are dealing with it to see another successful person.
Well, I appreciate that, Earl. You know, and I will tell you, I think it is, it's true. Is more we can normalize this. I did talk a whole episode on one of my podcasts about this. And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, don't get frustrated with your dyslexic kids or, you know, or family members, you know, like, you know, make sure you're there to support them and they're going to be okay, you know, but you've got to help them through this situation. I always say that my mom was always like, gosh, you know, you graduated 167 out of 169. Yeah, I graduated very low in my class, but I'm the most successful in my class too. So, you know, there's something to be said with, you know, just because you're given, you know, a challenge doesn't mean you can't overcome it. And just because you graduate low in your class doesn't mean that you're going to be an unsuccessful person. I never used any of the things that my teachers, you know, had told me in high school. A lot of them said, oh, you should go into some sort of a trade or some sort of whatever. And I just never felt that was anything that I was inspired by, right? I didn't want to go into a trade. They were like, you need to go do this, because essentially, you know, what they were saying is that, you know, that I wouldn't be able to do a corporate job or I wouldn't be able to do this. It's kind of interesting now that I look back at that and say, you know what, that's by letting somebody else put their story on you And I'm not allowing, I don't allow that for my kids, and I don't allow that for myself.
Yeah. No, I like it. It's a, you know, how do you like me now kind of thing, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, no, but I mean, yeah, and again, that's it. And I think the point here is, you know, a lot of people struggle with a lot of different things. And going back to that ownership and empowerment piece, you know, everybody's got their own thing, right? It's hard to sit back and really believe, and I know some people do, but really believe that, hey, this person has it all figured out. When chances are pretty good, they're dealing with something that you'll never know, you'll never see because of how they internalize it. And when we normalize it, we can build those relationships a little bit tighter, help each other through it, and make these things a little less of a stigma that people have to deal with. So again, I love it. I appreciate you sharing it. But you talked about your podcast again. If I remember right here, the title of your podcast is The Secret Is You, right?
Yep. Yep. The Secret Is You podcast I've been running, you know, and yeah, really it's just getting on, sharing some ideas, sharing different things that have happened in my life, in my day. I do a lot for, you know, small business entrepreneurs, people that are looking to go out there and be able to just have conversation. I think the biggest thing for me, that what I like to do with business owners is normalize the questions that I know they're thinking, because when you're running something or building something, you kind of feel like you're by yourself. You feel like you're on an island, things you can't ask your staff, things you can't talk about with your significant other. And so it's just giving ideas and giving things to be thinking about in there, because I think, you know, how I kind of would tell you is my, one of my big takeaways from everything in The Secret Is You is that you're the number one asset, right? Like you, meaning you, the person that I'm talking to right now, you're the asset, right? Like you're the biggest rainmaker. You're the person that's going to make everything happen. And so we have to take care of ourselves. We have to make sure that we're maintaining, you know, a healthy lifestyle. If it's going out there, making sure that we're putting good food into our body, making sure if we're exercising or just moving in a day, making sure we stay a student, making sure that we're out there networking and we're getting our life fulfilled by the different people that we're bringing into it. And that's really one of the biggest things that I will, you know, wanted to make sure that your listeners take away today. And again, you know, just appreciate you being on the show, but just that the secret is you. And when you start owning that and being that, you start believing that, you start making yourself a priority. You start making it understand that you are the asset and you need to take care of you. Because people, they might buy products, but they're buying products from you. They buy you. They buy what you tell them. They buy how you interact with them. They buy, you know, how you make them feel. So as long as you're taking care of yourself in this picture, that's where the real wealth will become for you and your business.
Mm, no, I love it. I love it. And folks, it's a great podcast. I highly recommend you go subscribe to it. I'm subscribed to it. I've only listened to a handful of episodes, but they're all fantastic. They go great. You know, I love the fact that you got the book and the podcast named the same thing, so everything's easy to find. But I'm going to have a link to your podcast in the show notes because I want people to go subscribe to this and listen to it. Well, Chris, we've been chatting here for close to 45 minutes here, and it has been a great conversation, in my opinion. Hopefully you've enjoyed yourself as well.
I've had a blast. I really appreciate you having me, Earl.
Yeah, no, I love it. You shared a lot of great info, and I'm just curious, before we work to wrap things up here, is there anything that we didn't get a chance to touch on that you really want to leave listeners with?
No, I think, you know, everything is, like I said, you are the number one asset. And I think once people start believing that aspect, things will start happening in their life. And the only other thing is Earl, can I come have you come on my podcast? Would that be something I can have you do?
Oh, it'd be an honor. It would be
all
an
right,
honor.
All right, good. Well, I'll have my team set that up too.
Okay. Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I appreciate that. Well, sir. So if people are, you know, let's say, cause I do have a decent, female audience here. Let's say some women have heard this. They want to find out more about, Pure Romance, joining the Pure Romance family. Anybody listening wants to find out about more about the book, find out more about what you do. What's a good way for them to go about doing that?
All right. Two places, pureromance.com. pureromance.com would be where, if you're looking at the business opportunity, you want to find out more about products, things that we do. And if you're looking for the book, it's secretisyou.com. Secretisyou.com is the book.
All right. Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, Chris, again, listeners, we've been with Chris Ciccinelli. The Secret Is You. I'm going to have all of this stuff in the link so you can go check it out. Chris, thank you very much for your time, man. I really appreciate you being with me today.
Earl, thanks again. I really appreciate you too.
All right. And listeners, if you need to reach out to me, you know, burden.command@gmail.com. That's burden.command@gmail.com. Whether you've got a guest idea, a story you want to share, whatever it is, if you just want to reach out and say hi, burden.command@gmail.com. Thank you all for rating, reviewing, subscribing, and sharing the show and doing all those great things to help these messages, like Chris's, get spread further and reach more people. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the next episode.
Hey, it's Tim from 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys, the comedy podcast you had no idea you needed. Join Ben, Jeff, and me as we continue our musical road trip back through the years and around the globe. See, just when you thought all white guys were like Joe Rogan, you come across three educators trying to remember when we were cool.
50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Electric Acid.
Are you passionate about saving the planet for future generations? Do you want to learn how to do it? If yes, then you need to tune in to the Nature Backed Podcast. It's a talk show covering the changing world around us, from renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, circular economy, to ESG and social innovation. Don't miss this opportunity to discover how you can join the movement and make a difference. Subscribe to the Nature Backed Podcast today on your favorite platform and get ready to be amazed.
Electric Acid.